Yo. Can you hear me? You listening to
hashtag WAW. What a week. What a week.
Hey, Ta. Welcome to Wow, What a Week. It's been quite a week, and that is why we have the gent that we have in today. He sued the Minister of Police and won, and has more powerful enemies than most politicians have friends, I would like to assume. He broke the arms deal that ended had Malume Tony end up behind bars. He exposed the 1.7 billion rand police lease scandal that cost Malume Begi his national commissioner job, and got handcuffed for his trouble 3 days later. He's a Bushbuck Ridge boy who turned a freelance gig at the Witbank News into one of the most feared bylines in South African journalism. He's coming up next.
This is
Wow!
What a week. What a week. Celebrity guest.
Celebrity guest.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, lovers of facts and investigative journalism, our guest is in the building. Author of Nothing Left to Steal, music producer, Pan-Africanist, professional pain in the establishment's neck. It's been a week. Mzilikazi wa Afrika. Welcome to our week, brother.
Thanks. Thanks for having me, and thanks for this time around, yeah.
Leonard. When last did anyone call you Leonard?
It was at high school, probably. Yes.
What was it at the time that said to you, no, man, come Africa, man. What's this Leonard business?
It was after I watched Roots.
Aha.
I watched Roots over and, I spent the whole weekend watching. You know, it's a very long movie. So...
No, they watched the movie or the series?
The movie, the series only came now. The movie back
No,
then.
There's a Roots series that I watched when I was 10 years old in 1982.
Yes. That's the original Roots.
Yes.
It was a series, but it came as one package, you know?
Yes,
remember the series stuff start now with your Netflix and all of that.
Yeah, because we used to watch it on VHS.
I had
and return it, yeah.
So a friend of mine came... to me and gave me Roots.
Mm.
It was on a Friday.
Yeah.
And he said he's coming back to collect it because he knew I love movies, you know. So I watched Roots and then it touched me that, you know, we're going around calling ourselves
Toby.
Like, and also for me, the name Leonard was not the name that my parents gave. My parents gave me the name Vus.
Ah.
My friends gave me the name Leonard because I used to play soccer like Leonard Waga Waga Ligwebo from Kenya. So that's why they called me Leonard.
Sure.
So I end up there. But my parents gave me one name, Vus.
Yes,
that's all.
Yes.
So after I watched Roots, and also at the time of watching Roots, I was listening to Mzwakhe Mbule's Changes Pain, the album. So I need to dump this Leonard thing up, more especially it didn't come from my parents. It was
how old were you?
I think I was 17.
Mm.
I was 17 around that time. Yeah. Mm. That's when I started become political conscious, sure, and becoming aware of things around the world and all of that. And then that's when I said I went for Mzilika.
Sure.
No. Yeah.
So you were 17 around which period? Roughly.
No, you don't want Sasa to come knocking at my door tomorrow. No.
I'm asking because you are part of a cohort that were politically conscious from an early stage.
Yes.
I mean, your likes of Stompy, your likes of Julius Malema, conscientized from the beginning of puberty, pretty much. Where are we failing our kids when it comes to conscientizing them, do you believe?
I think our parents today, they tend to spoil their kids. There's nothing wrong with spoiling your kids.
Mm.
But, you know, you don't spend time with them.
Mm.
You don't show them the ways you were raised.
Yes.
My daughter is 21 years.
Mm.
She has introduced me to more jazz musicians than that I didn't even know.
My 17-year-old has done that.
So Because she grew up from listening to the music that I was listening. And then she outgrew it. She started listening to more other serious jazz stuff. Like, so that's why if she discovers a new artist, she said that, do you know about ABCD? She's playing me that artist. I'm like, wow, I didn't know anything about it. So, so we tend to, we think money is the best teacher for our kids. As long as we buy them the new gadgets, you give them allowance that allows them to go to wherever every weekend, we think that's enough. We're not telling them who we are.
Yes.
Where do we come from? Where can we go as a nation if we do ABCD?
Absolutely.
So it's such a funny thing because I have that talent of seeing things before. Let me give you an example. So when Fikile Mbalula was elected as the president of the ANC Youth League, I called him one day. I told him, I said, you know, bro, the way things are going, the way you guys are behaving as the ANC Youth League, come 2017, I was specific. I said, come 2017, David Mabuza is going to be there. Deputy president of this country. He laughed at me. Same Z, you know, you're smoking something very strong. 2017, after the Nasrec results were announced, first call I got in the morning, it was Fikile. Say, MZ, how did you know? Back then, it was not even 10 years ago. It was like more than 10 years ago. Because after Fikile, it was Gigaba or... I can't remember who came first, but then it was Julius.
Yes.
But it was not, it was a long. So he said, how did you know? I said, I study politics. I study the patterns. I study the trends. I can see where things are going.
What was it about Didi's trajectory that said to you, that's where he's going?
See, Didi was operating like a mouse. You know, a mouse will bite you and say,
yeah,
that's how it was. His strategy, he'll bite you when he realized that you are jumping. He realized he'll call you, sit you down, and all of that. He was strategic in that way and was very smart. And then I realized that if he's given more power, he's given more resources,
yes,
he can mobilize himself to reach this point. That's what I realized.
What was your relationship with Didi?
It started as a bad one, but it ended up as a good one. I remember when I was arrested, he was the complainant in my case.
What was the complaint?
That I'm writing shit stories about it. Sorry, excuse my friend.
No, it's fine. French is welcome here.
Yeah. So it was one of the saddest things that when we eventually have a sit down, me and him, because I asked him, what wrong have I done to you?
Yes.
Said, beside the stories that you've written about me, nothing wrong you've done to me. So I said, so you tried all of this, you know, because I've written. I said, what is wrong? If those stories were wrong, why didn't you sue me? So no, I couldn't sue because some of the stories were right. And if I sued, I was going to open a can of worm. So I said, so you opted, you took the shortcut to try and get me in jail.
Who facilitated the meeting?
Robert Gumede facilitated the meeting. Actually, he was the mediator in that in that whole setup.
Why did you show up for that meeting?
Because I respect Robert Gumede.
Ah, yes.
So there were a lot of people who came. That said, did he send them to come? But when he sent Robert, I think he knew that there are two people you could send to me and I won't say no to them. That will be Robert Gumede and Matthew Sposa.
Ah, yes.
Those two, he knew that I won't say no to them.
And they're your homeboys, miss.
They're my homeboys. So then Robert came to me that morning and said, Umnaga, he really wants to see you.
Yes.
I think this time you must give him an ear. I like, now, but you know, I said, no, Umnaga, let's just go.
Sure.
And then I agreed. We flew down, we sat down. It was the longest reconciliation meeting ever. I think the meeting started at about 4 p.m. I think we left at about 1 a.m.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was how long the meeting was. Because we had to open up to each other. Everything, the wrongs, the old. Mm. Yeah. And it was very emotional because I was hurt, you know. Mm. Point is, not beside being arrested, they tried to kill me.
Mm.
Not once, not twice, but a number of times.
Mm.
So it was a very emotional reconciliation.
Are you happy that meeting happened?
Yeah. You see, that's what I said to Robert, like, as we're flying back that early hours of that morning.
As one does in a private jet, yeah.
Yeah, so I said to Mnaga, as much as I was angry this morning when he approached me, but I'm happy that this is done.
Mm.
I've cleared what was in my chest. Sure. Now I can breathe.
Mm.
So I was happy after that meeting. And our relationship changed completely there. We became friends, kind of.
Sure.
Yes.
So I remember when I was at 5FM.
Yes.
We used to do a lot of political commentary with parodies and skits.
Yes.
We'd record those every day. And I remember we did a skit about Bratoni. And as fate would have it, obviously he came out. And 5FM had an event in Cape Town at St. Eve's. Bratoni was at that event. And I remember the first thing I was thinking as I saw him was, ish, ke Bratoni. And we did a parody about him. And then we interact. And then he laughs that, well, you know, you guys are silly or you're naughty. But we laughed about it. You meet a lot of the actors that you write about. What kind of atmosphere is there when you meet them? And what goes through your head as you meet them?
So, everyone will tell me, I don't hate anyone.
Yes.
Even those who try to kill me, I don't hate them. Mm. So if I meet someone, I'm just meeting someone. I don't have grudges. I'm not carrying any baggage. Mm. It's up to them whether they will shake my hand or don't want to shake my hand. It's a very tricky one because people react differently.
Who did you feel uneasiest meeting that you have investigated and written about?
It was someone from Mama Faith. Okay, let me put it that way.
Yes.
Someone from Mama Faith. So I exposed the then DG of Mama Faith for bringing Zambian basketball player to South Africa and gave them South African IDs.
Mm.
So when I phoned his office to try and get his comment, they keep on transferring my call to some lady.
Mm.
So, and that lady was, at first, she was very arrogant.
Mm.
Very arrogant to the point that we exchanged some heated arguments, like really, because she was very impossible. So one day she called me, but she didn't call me directly. Someone called me and said, there is a source at Home Affairs who want to give you more details about the story you are writing. Mm. So they want you to meet them at this place and the point.
Yeah,
I go there and that's how she introduced herself.
Ah, okay.
I'm the lady that... It made me really, really, really uneasy.
Mm.
But that's how it happened.
Mm.
So, but then she said, you must understand, I was trying to protect my boss. It's not my nature.
Mm.
But I was told that every time you call, I must treat you this way.
You must deflect.
Yes.
Mm.
So, but it made me, when she introduced herself as, I'm the person you just had a fight with last week over the phone, you know?
Mm.
So, yeah.
When you choose a subject or a story to follow, how do you weigh this might cause them more distress, embarrassment, and reputational damage than is worth the public interest? How do you weigh the two? Do you ever have to weigh the two?
Definitely.
Yeah.
You see, for example, I'll never write a story about who we are dating until you start booking hotels who state money. That's when I come in.
Okay.
But if you are dating someone, is you are not abusing state resources. Mm. It's none of. So I'll every time I write stories, I'll leave that out of the story because it's got nothing to do with the other side. Yes. But once you start touching taxpayers' money, that's when I come in.
Yeah, because now you're screwing someone and the state.
Exactly. Okay. Exactly. That's how I weigh my stories. Talking about Bratton, it's very interesting because when we investigated, so the Sunday Times investigation unit at the time, it was myself, Jessica Bezedenhout, and Andre Jergens when we investigated the arms deal. So we went back to the original claims about the arms deal, and then when Patricia Dilley stood in Parliament, she says she's got this corruption about the arms deal and stuff.
The dossier. Yes.
So we look at that dossier and said, which out of everything, which one is easy to prove? And if the dossier claims that Tony Ngeno was bribed with a car, said, but the car has got the history, it's got papers, it's got all of that. So it was easy to trace the history of the car. So we started putting like a few things together, and then I phoned Bratton and like, can I come talk to you? He said about what? I said about your car. He said, yeah, you know, I'm the chief whip of the majority party. You have to see me, you must come to Parliament. I flew down to Parliament, I met him in his office, and then see, as I'm sitting there in front of him, he says to me, I was just advised not to talk to you. I said, but you allowed me to fly all the way from Johannesburg to come here to Cape Town. Why you didn't tell this over the phone? And then he said to me, you know, my car, he said, he waved some pieces of papers, like, see, my car, I'm paying for it, and every month. I said, can I see? He refused. Then went back and started looking at the history of that car, and then that's when we discovered that there was another car. There were other two cars. And if he sat down and talked to me about it, the other two cars might not have even picked them up. But now we started investigating more deeper and more deeper, and then that's when we found out two more cars. So that's what happened.
What's your relationship like with Bratton?
He doesn't talk to me to this day.
Okay. But you understand why?
I understand, but a lot of people tried. That's one other guy that a lot of people tried for us to reconcile.
Yes.
He doesn't want to talk to me.
It's
not what I've written. It's what he has said about me. That's what makes him too embarrassed to come to that meeting.
Yes, sir.
Because he called me all sorts of things. I mean, in the first court appearance and the commercial court in Pretoria, he called me a dog in court. Because as I walked in, he was there in the dog, and then he said to his friend, he said, "Na ilenja mapepin." And he did a lot of other stuff. So for me, it's not about the story I've written about, we have written about him. It's about what is eating him inside. He knows he has done a lot. That calling me a dog was one of them. But there are a lot of other stuff that is I don't want to talk about.
What would it take for you to reconcile Bratton?
Me, I've always been open. He's the one who doesn't. I like there are a lot of people we've tried. They've tried to put us together. I said, I'm okay. Like, for example, him, the other time he just met me, he found me sitting at the restaurant with Advocate Skakane. He just greeted Skakane and ignored me. And it was just the two of us on the table. And then Advocate Skakane asked me, what's the issue? I'm like, it's this, we should have asked him, why are you not greeting my friend here in front of me? So to hear the story. Yeah. And there are a number of occasions like that.
Sure.
That we've bumped into each other. You'll speak to the people around me and you won't talk to me. Yeah.
Your arrest was what, 2010?
2010, August 3rd.
Yeah. So 2000, I was on a trip to Nigeria. I was still at Y at the time. So we're visiting Rhythm FM. We had an exchange program with them. And they took us on a tour of different media houses in Lagos. And the overarching story or theme that we got from most journalists at the time was that in Nigeria, for a lot of journalists, it's literally risky business being a journalist. And that a lot of journalists have been given so-called acid baths, where they even pour acid over your face.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
To show you.
Yes.
And we even met a journalist whose face was scarred because of this acid bath. The job that you do is dangerous.
This.
You're married, you've got kids. And even as with other jobs where people are operating at high risk, you continue to do it. Where do you get this fearlessness from that would have many people saying, I'd rather not do this job?
I think...
Are you fearless or are you naive?
No, I'm just fearless.
Yes, sir.
I think for me, journalism was a calling.
Mm.
And I needed to do it perfectly.
Yes.
More special because it was a job that I promised my grandfather. Because after passing my matric, so now I'm supposed to go to tertiary. So my grandfather set me down. He said, me, as your grandfather, I want you to be a pastor. I want to send you to your Bible school. I'm like, no, the grandpa,
Pastor Mzee.
That's not what I want. He says, what do you want?
Yeah.
I said, I want to be a journalist.
Like,
he said, but there are so many of them. I said, no, I want to be a different kind of journalist.
Sure.
I said, what journalist do? I said, I want to be an investigative journalist. And it was that because then he asked me a question which I answered and then he gave me his blessing and he said to me, you are going to be one of the best investigative journalists in this country. So every time I'm doing that story, I've got that I got a blessing from my grandfather and I must not disappoint him. So I'm doing it to the best of my knowledge and the best of my capabilities. Yes.
The attempts on your life, are they failed because they did a bad job or it was just a warning? Or are you resilient and maybe got out of the way in time?
So some of them is just protection from above. I'll give you an example.
Do you have a tally? How many attempts on your life has it been?
I need to take off my shoes if I really want to account.
I've also got toes. If you need toes on my side.
So I need to. There were so many. So many.
What was the first one where you realized that, oh, flip, they're trying to kill me here?
The first one was when I was thrown into Kruger National Park. I was beaten up and thrown into Kruger National Park.
What year was this?
That was 1999.
Okay.
So that was the first one.
Do you remember what you had written at the time?
I was investigating human trafficking. The guy discovered who I was. I was in this part of the people who were smuggled back into South Africa, discovered who I was, and then he beat me up and threw me in the middle of Kruger National Park.
How bad was the beating?
It was bad.
Mm.
It was bad because I think I had those bandages for almost the whole week. Yes. Because it was bad.
As you're enduring this beating, what are you thinking? Are you saying anything to them?
No.
What are they saying to you as they're beating you?
No, you said all sort of nasty things. But as I was enduring the pain, I said to myself, I need to follow up on this guy. Because if I don't stop him, someone might stop him far too late. And eventually was arrested.
So you're not even thinking, I'm going to die here today?
No. But it was at that time when I just made that decision that I'm not telling my wife what I'm doing.
Yes.
So she's not compromised. Even if they take her and torture her, they won't find anything. They take her at some stage, we wrote a story about her boss. And they interrogated her. They thought she was the leak. And they find out she wasn't. She didn't even know nothing.
But what did this interrogation look like when they interrogated
her? No, this is your boyfriend who's written about your boss. What more information? How come he didn't warn us? I don't know anything.
Yeah.
That man, you don't tell him anything. He does what... So I wanted to tell you about this, about some of how some of... I survived some of the death threats.
So how did you survive the Kruger?
The lions, I think they were sleeping. Or they were, either they were sleeping or they were full.
Oh, I was going to say, or they've eaten already.
Yes. So that's how I survive.
Or they can tell that this one is a tough cookie.
So that's how I survive. So
how long were you in the Kruger?
I think I was there for more than an hour or plus.
Because
I had to walk and walk and walk.
Oh, so you're walking, Jay?
Yes, okay. I was walking. I didn't know which direction to walk. I was just walking. Until we're like, after walking, so I could hear the distance, the cars passing by. So I thought, oh, that side, there might be a road. And I walked towards that direction. And there was that big fence. Then we have to jump it. Then, yeah.
Who's the first person you called?
I called my boss. I called my boss. I made a reverse call.
Ah, okay.
So I hitchhiked to Malelani. I made a reverse call to my boss. And I asked my boss to call my wife. And yeah, and then my boss made arrangement for me to go and see a doctor in Nelspruit. That's what happened. So in this occasion, two gentlemen go to a hitman's house to go and hire him to kill me. So as the wife of the hitman is in the kitchen cooking, she overhears the conversation. And the following day, I get a phone call from a relative of the wife saying, hey, dude, please meet me urgently. I'm coming with someone with some bad news. And then I met them at the car wash.
Driving there, did you have an idea?
I didn't have any idea. Okay. It was not. So I arrived there, and then the woman says to me, you don't know me, I don't know you, but I know about you. I said, how do you know me? He said, yesterday... She asked me, do you know so-and-so? I said, yeah, I know. She said, yesterday, these two people were at my house. They hired my husband to kill you. I'm angry with my husband because when I met him, I knew he was a thug. But when we got married, he promised me that he has stopped doing this shit. Now I'm angry. And I want to tell you, and I'm also going to file for divorce. Which she did. And that's how I survived. And I confronted the hitman. I said, dude, I'm told you've been hired to kill me.
I'm the guy you're looking for.
Yeah, at first he denied. He denied, like, but eventually admitted that I caught him. But then after that, they outsourced the killing to someone, a white guy this time. I'm in a meeting in Pretoria. I get a phone call from a number I don't know. It's a white guy saying, you must please meet me. So I meet him. But now, because I've got an idea, I phone my boss. I say, I've got a phone call. It might be one of these guys.
So there's a pattern you're picking up with these things.
It is.
Yes.
So my boss said, okay, where are you meeting this guy? So I tell my boss where I agreed to meet with this guy because I need to meet him. We met at McDonald's in Rosebank. So my boss said, okay, as soon as you leave Pretoria, let me know so I can send some people to go and see the Rosebank to monitor the situation. I go there, I meet the guy. He says to me, you know, I was hired to kill you because they hired. So he mentioned the other guy that I confronted. Said, but because of that, he couldn't do it. So they hired me to kill you. So I went home, I Googled before killing you. I wanted to know where I'm killing and why.
At least he's thorough.
Yes. So then he said, I realize you are a good guy. And the guys that hired me are the bad guys. So therefore, I'm not going to kill you, but I'm just warning you. Because if I'm not doing the job, they might get someone else.
Just know that your number is out.
Unfortunately, that same day, the guy was killed. They called him to a meeting. They asked him why he has not killed me. They gave me something. He died of poisoning.
Oh, wow.
He died. I survived. So it's like I said, it's through the grace of God and the ancestors. I'm still here.
The stories around the attempts on your life, do you proceed with the stories?
Yeah. See, that's for me, that's the thing. Once you step on my toes, I'm going to kick you. I'm not going to say, yeah. So I've never backed off. So it doesn't matter how many gunmen you are sending to me, I'm not going to back off. That's me. You might say I'm naive, but I think I'm brave. courageous.
Would you say your abduction was the closest they've ever come to taking you out? Or has there been a worse situation?
There was a worse situation where the gun pointed at my head.
And then what happened? It jammed? What happened?
They thought I was alone in the car.
Ah.
When they realized that I had other people in the car, that's when they ran away.
Yeah.
So, you see, it became a point where you know what you must do to survive some of these tricks.
Mm.
So I was out of the country. So they knew I was out of the country. So as I was coming, I phoned my friend, said, guys, meet me at the airport because I suspected something. So I said, they must sit at the back. So I get pulled by blue light. I'm not sure whether it was police because I just heard, and I pull over. The guys, instead of asking for driver's license, they just come and pull the gun. And then when he realized there were people, and then he ran.
Yeah.
That's what, and then he didn't fire a single shot.
You say on your way back, you had a feeling. What feeling was that?
Because I kept on getting messages when I was out of the country.
Mm.
That's, hey, you have pissed off these people, this what they're busy planning. Remember, Fresh, when you start doing something that most people like, some of them, when they hear what other people are planning against you, they'll give you tips.
Okay.
So I started getting tips from their circle. Hey, you have pissed off these guys. This is what they're planning. Be careful. And that's why they're planning when you arrive on the way between the airport and your house.
Mm.
That's when they want to do this thing. So I knew. That's why I had to ask my friend.
So did that story come out?
Yeah, it did.
Do you think your phone is bugged?
It's been confirmed so many times by Inspector General of Intelligence, so many times.
Mm.
It's been confirmed that my phone was bugged so many. Once, not twice, but so many times.
No, because I'm just thinking about how they would know your movements and everything else.
Yeah, my phone has been illegal bugged so many times. So many times.
What happens when you feel like, no man, it doesn't make sense, they must be listening? What is it that triggers that in your head?
The point is, I'm not stupid to do stupid things on my phone.
Okay.
So even if I want to talk to you about something very sensitive, I'll resist that temptation because that's why I always say to people, every day of your life, treat your phone as if it's bugged. Say less, do less, just live your life and let them wonder, what is this guy not, why is not called this one? But you must find ways of communicating. Yes.
What does your wife feel about your job all these years in now?
See, on my 5th year's birthday, my wife said something that really, I shed a tear after that. Because I didn't realize it. So it's my birthday, it's my 40th birthday, all my friends are there. And then my wife said, I never knew this day will come that I'll have a birthday with him still alive. Because I thought they're going to kill him before he reaches 40. That really made me, I shed the tears. Because I didn't, yeah. So, because there are a lot of bad stuff that some of them I don't want to talk about. They might open some old wounds, but there are a lot of bad stuff they've done to me. A lot of bad stuff.
Is there anything you're willing to share that they've done to you that's bad?
Oh, my man. It's a lot. So
just one.
You know, Fresh, there's a point where a politician gave someone a HIV positive injection to come and inject me. Just they come close to, they arrange some sort
of contaminated blood.
Yes. To come and inject me. And yeah, it happened that I didn't go to that meeting because, like I said, people who like what you're doing, they'll give it. Say, tomorrow you're supposed to meet Fresh. Please don't go because this is what Fresh has been hired to do to you. So it did happen. There are a lot of all those stuff.
Did nobody tell them that HIV is not a death sentence? Or they didn't know?
I don't know. But remember now, they'll inject you, then they'll go, that man, don't worry about it, it's HIV positive. No, they'll use that just to dehumanize you.
What's your relationship like with eating out, drinking, cool drink and water in public, because poisonings are also a thing.
Yes.
So clearly you have to be vigilant at all times.
That's why I spend most time, 90% or 95% of my time at home. Mm. So I managed to build my gym at my house, my recording studio in my house. So everything I need is in my house.
Mm.
So I only go to the shops because I have to go maybe buy some stuff or have to go. But again, I've learned that I don't go and meet every Tom, Dick and Harry.
Oh, yes.
I meet, yeah. And also, where do we meet? I don't go. That's why I might be around here, but you have not seen me. So, but we are around here because I'm always at home.
Mm.
It's an era where if I'm not traveling, I'm at home.
Do you get danger pay? Because your occupational hazards are more than most occupations. Do you feel you deserve danger pay?
No. I feel I'm just a worker. Like anyone works in the office, I'm just doing my job properly.
Yeah, but no one is trying to shoot Mavis making tea there at the company.
You'll be surprised.
Are you serious?
You'll be surprised. You'll be surprised how many Mavises have been shot because they overheard something while they're making the tea.
Yes, it's not the
making of the tea. Mm. It's the environment you're working in, is happening in that environment.
Mm.
When people suspect that, oh, this one might have heard or might have seen, or then they will go for it, regardless whether you're a cleaner or a tea lady or something like that, they will go for you. So it's not the position that they're killing you for. It's what it's the knowledge that we have that they will kill you for.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You don't feel you need a security detail?
No.
Mm.
Because I've realized in these years, there were points in my life where I had bodyguards.
Yes.
But I started getting stories about certain politicians, and my sources were their bodyguards. That's why I'm like, okay, bodyguards can't be trusted. So
yeah, that, your detail is probably the easiest person to buy.
Yeah.
In the first place.
I can take good care of myself.
Mm.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to talk about your week, because obviously this is Wow What a Week. So I'm going to ask you questions about your week. I think firstly, take us through your week. What did Monday look like for an investigative journalist? And did your week end where it started? Tell us about this week.
So Monday I was out of the country. I won't say where. I had to go and meet some people out of the country. So I had like about, on Monday alone, I had 4 different meetings out of the country because I had to fly back on a Tuesday.
Sure.
So I need to wrap up. But I was there since Sunday, you know. So I was out since Sunday. So Monday I had to, out of the country, had 4 meetings. Tuesday I was back. After greeting the family and making sure everyone, I hit the studio because I'm trying to finish my albums. So I'm busy recording 2 albums dedicated to my parents.
Nice.
The alternative album is dedicated to my mom. The house album is dedicated to my dad. So that's where after that, Tuesday, I was in the studio.
Sure. So when you're not making trouble, you're making music.
Yeah, I'm making music because that's how I detox, you know. I don't drink, I don't smoke. So music for me is how I spend more time in my studio making music, writing songs. So that's how. So Wednesday, I had to shoot my podcast. And I was shooting with Advocate Moses Kakan.
Oh, yes.
So, and then again, after that shoot, back to the studio. Like now from here, back to the studio.
Can you leak anything to us about the project? Any collaborations worth mentioning? Anything exciting? Beyond that, it's tributes to Mama and Papa.
Okay. On the alternative album, because it's already done, I featured Usisi Brenda Mtambo.
I had her on my show this week.
Yes, yeah, I know.
In fact, I'll be attending her show on Saturday tomorrow. Yes.
I had Usis Brenda, I had Uhasheli Mhlophe, I have Thuthukani Lakidube's right hand man because we did a reggae song together. I had Uphila Dlozi, I have Uphila Dlozi there. Amadou Sousso.
Yes.
He's from Gambia. Mm. He's a kora player.
Yes.
We did a song as a tribute to Pops Mohammed, you know. I needed to get someone who plays kora more like Pops Mohammed.
Oh, yes.
For the tribute song to make sense.
Rest in peace, bro, Pops.
Thanks. Yeah, mm. So I had to get Amadou to do that, and then I've got I've got a lot of people. And
when you say alternative, it's everything but Afro House.
Yes, it's okay. Everything. Because my mom will play me Dolly Parton and play me Jimmy Cliff and play me Salif Keita. They say, listen to these songs. Listen to this music, my son. So she wouldn't say this is a country song, this is a reggae song, this is... So I'm doing that kind. So when I was doing this album, I was following what my mom used to play me.
Yes.
So I play those kind of, it's the same, almost the same lineup.
So this album is Mama's influence.
Yes, it's Mama. That's why it's dedicated to him.
Yes.
And then the dance album, because when I did my wedding, most people don't know I was with my dad.
Ah.
So
no, but that project was amazing. Yes. I almost feel like it didn't get the attention it deserved.
In South Africa, but outside the borders.
Outside the borders, it got love. But a part of me almost felt like it still didn't get enough love.
Yeah.
For me, I almost felt like the gods were in the room with you when you made that album. It felt very ancestral, very spiritual.
It was because you know, in Bushbuck Ridge, you've got some traditional dance that happens on most Sundays. It's called Mchongolo, you know?
Yes.
That's where you go and compete in traditional dancing.
Is this the part where you put the mic aside and show me?
No. No. You need all the drums and all of that, you know?
Yeah.
So my dad took me there to this because I was home. He said, yeah, you spend more time in Joburg. You no longer go to this event. Let's go.
You're not part of the culture.
Yeah. I go there with my dad. So while I'm there, those people are dancing. I came with this idea of Mawelel. And I told my dad, I said, no, thanks for bringing me here. He said, why? I said, I got a song out of this thing. He said, what song? I said, no, you'll hear it on the radio because I didn't want him to spoil it or try to divert the ideas that I have on the song.
Yes.
So I came back to Joburg. I started playing around with the musical part of it. After I've done that, and that's when I phoned Sis Candy, Zamandebele. I said, Sissy, I've got this song and I think you are the best person to execute it. And she came to the studio and then we recorded it and the rest is history.
Yes, sir.
And you know, the song was number one for 8 straight weeks outside the country.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And this is at a time where we didn't have TikTok trends.
No.
It literally off its own steam.
Yes.
It built this momentum.
Yes.
How did you feel about that?
You know, that's how I built that relationship with Bodhisattva.
Yes.
Because he was the first person who called me, reached out to me. Remember, there was MySpace at the time back then. There was no TikTok or X. There was something called MySpace.
Yes.
Bodhisattva reached me on MySpace.
Imagine.
Said, dude, this song is going to be big. Do you want me to remix it for you?
Yes.
And that's when he was the first person to do the remix.
Mm.
And then there was a guy called Max Pella. He now lives in Japan. He's from Dominican Republic.
Yes.
So he was invited to play at the Independence Day. He played the whole EP of Mawelele there. And for me, it was something amazing, you know.
Mm.
Louis Vega, on his birthday in New York and Brooklyn, he played that song on his birthday. So it was something big for me. And that's why the song... really made a name for me, you know. So, but now that's why I want to go back there on this alternative album. So far, I've got a Black Coffee remix of Mawelele that was never been released.
Yes.
It's going to be on this album.
A recent Black Coffee or Black Coffee 15 years ago?
15 years ago.
Okay.
Back to that.
Yes.
It's never been released.
Yes.
It's going to be on the album. I worked with, you know, the guys who started house music in Chicago, Alexis,
yes,
Shelby,
yes.
I worked with them.
Oh wow!
I worked with them on the song, It's called rice.
Mm.
It's so amazing.
Yes.
I'm busy with Kent. Mm. We are doing something.
Yes, yes.
DJ Kent.
Yes, yes.
I'm waiting for Oskido because I told him I'm back in the studio. He said he'll make some time. You'll come. We do something because me and him, you know, we go way back.
Mm.
I've got DJ Maporisa.
Mm.
I'm still waiting for him to come to the studio because I said, let's go back to the tribal house, the ancestral house we used to do.
Ground zero.
Yeah, we're going back to ground zero, you know? So him, I've got a couple of remixes of traditional songs that I love and they've already done. So, but the dance album is like 80% done.
Mm.
The alternative album is done. Actually, it's mixed in. It's only one song that is outstanding out of that.
Yeah. Rough release date? Roughly, Jane.
I don't know because I even signed the contract with the label that is going to release the two projects.
But there is a label that's
there's a label. Okay. It's an American label. Mm. Like I can say, it's an American label.
Okay.
But I've not signed it. The reason I've not signed is because I wanted to finish the album so that when I say they want the albums next week,
yes,
they are ready, I can deliver. So I didn't want to sign and now under pressure to finish them and just do a quick job instead of doing a thorough job that the way I want them.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
We're still talking about the week.
Yes.
What are you grateful for this week?
I'm grateful for this week that all my kids are alive.
Mm.
My wife is alive. Mm. I'm alive. I'm not on a venting machine, a ventilator or anything. Mm. I've got roof over my head. I'm going back to the studio to make music. What I love from here, I'm just happy. You know, those smaller things that we ignore, they make a lot of... they give you comfort when you sleep at night knowing that, wow, I'm sleeping on my bed, I'm not in hospital, my kids are here under this roof and we are all fine, you know?
You know, I say that to Majita all the time, that if you have your health when you wake up, then you've won half the race. Like you have for the
Definitely.
You can have R1 billion, but if you don't have your health, you have nothing.
Nothing. It's got nothing. If you can't sleep with your R1 billion, then it's nothing. I sleep peacefully at night.
Mm.
Yes.
What did you pray for this week?
This week, something personal.
Mm.
My wife went through surgery last week.
Mm.
So I pray that she recovers quickly.
Mm.
She's back on her feet. Which I'm grateful she is. Like yesterday, for the first time, she went shopping with our daughter, you know? Mm. So it shows...
Ali Karim went shopping, but wakula, so...
Yeah, yes, yes. Yeah, so unfortunately, she's not appearing at Madlanga Commission. Mm. So I pray that she gets healed quickly, back on her feet and all of that. More especially because I've seen the pain before and after the surgery.
Yes, yes.
So I wish to see that going away and all of this. So that was my prayer for this week, that I wish she's back on her feet and no more in pain and all of that.
What did your wife call you out on this week? And she was right.
let me think about carefully. About it.
We listen very carefully.
Very carefully. I'd rather not say it.
But you were called out.
Yes, I was. It's something to do, it's a domestic, it's something to do with my stepmom. So it's not something to do with us.
Mm.
My dad passed on, but he was married to my stepmom. So my stepmom phoned my wife, and my wife, after that phone call, yes.
What made you happy this week?
That I'm healthy and alive. Mm. That makes me happy. And my family is healthy and alive. It makes me happy.
What made you sad this week?
It made me sad because my wife is still in a lot of pain.
Yes. Mm.
Yeah, that's really... Because when I left on Sunday, I was hoping when I come back, because, you know, I've been seeing a pain. So, because even the trip, she's the one saying, no, you've been here on by my side all through. Just go and get some fresh air.
Sure.
So I was hoping when I come back, but now I can see there's a difference. Yeah, that, yeah.
Did you cry about anything this week?
No. Not unfortunately.
What makes Mzi cry?
I haven't cried in a long time. I cried when my mom died. I cried when my dad died. The reason I cried when my dad died, because I was with him 2 days before he died.
What was the last thing he said to you?
No, he said, because he was in Bushbuck Ridge. So I went to Bushbuck Ridge. I go there with the family. So he was in hospital. So he said to me, when he come back, I'll be better. Travel safe. I thought it was a Sunday. Monday, it's gone. And he was fine, according to me. So, yeah. So with my mom, I was sad because I couldn't see her. I think she died a month after I've seen her, after I've been to visit her. It's one of those things because my kids were still young. But because they were still young, every time we go to Bushbuck Ridge, we'll videoize everything. So I've kept the cassette. So once I'll show them. So, but that day, I think, I spent more time videoizing my mom playing with my kids. A lot. It looked like when I sit now back and look back, I think she was saying goodbye to everyone. She was saying goodbye to those kids and all of that. But like I said, unfortunately, she passed away almost a month after I've seen her.
Yes.
I was sad that I didn't say goodbye to her. Yes.
Parenting do's and don'ts from both mom and dad that you've taken into your parenting. What are you never repeating that mom and dad might have done to parent you? And what are you replicating because you feel it was necessary and it worked?
They don't.
Yeah.
My mom used to give us a hiding.
Hey. Oh, man.
So, is they don't. I won't do. I won't do that to my kids. I'd rather do my father's way. My dad will sit you down. Regardless, you've broken 10 glasses, he'll call you in, sit you down, and tell you you have done wrong. You've broken the glasses. You were supposed to do this and that. So that's what I've learned from my dad. You know, so that's what I'm bringing to my parenting.
Yes.
Sitting my kids down. I mean, even when I'm wrong, I'll call a family meeting. I'm like, guys, I messed up. Forgive me. I've done this. I was not supposed to do it. And the kids, they know. They're not censored. My last born, she's studying law. She's like the union in the family.
How old is she?
She's 21.
Yes.
She'll give it straight, raw. If you've done something wrong, she'll tell you to. She won't miss a word. So that's what I've taught my kids, to be honest, independent, and open about anything. Yes.
Why do you think it is that a lot of parents almost want to muzzle their children when they call them out on the things they need to be called out on? Because, for instance, my 17-year-old will call me out on anything she feels I must be called out on. But I know when I was 17, I wouldn't dare do that. And I don't even discourage her from doing it, because I want her to know that if you feel that I'm messing up, I want you to be able to tell me. You must not be afraid to tell me that, Papa, ke flop onto you.
So for me, so I want when my daughter eventually maybe get married or something, must make what she's doing to me, she must continue doing it to even to her husband. If it's wrong, it's wrong. There's no other ways. So that's what I tell my kids. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. I have to apologize, I'll apologize. But at least must hear my side. Why did I do that? Why? If it was an oversight, I'll explain this was an oversight. This was a planned thing. This was not planned. It just happened. So that's the thing. I want I want them to do that. Mm-hmm. And I also, I'm doing the same thing. If I see something wrong, I call them, like I said, we sit down, I say, I see this thing, why did he do it? Why didn't take this direction or this one instead of this one? So we talk.
Mm.
Yeah, but, you know, kids, they learn because they observe from young age what you're doing and they start following your footsteps. Mm. So you must be careful on what you do in front of them and what they discover about you because they might replicate it. Absolutely. If it's a bad thing or a good thing.
Mm.
Yes.
When last did you call a meeting to apologize? Because you say if you are wrong, you'll even call a meeting to apologize.
It was last November.
Mm.
Yeah.
Was it a public thing or a private thing?
It was a private thing.
Mm.
Yes. I did call a meeting. I sat down with them and I apologized.
Mm.
Yes.
You were in the tabloids. Was it 2017 or 18 or 19?
No.
You were never in the tabloids in 2017,
18? No.
But how do they deal with any backlash that you might receive because of the work you do? And and what conversations do you have with your children about such?
See, most of the time when I did those hitting stories, they were still young.
Mm.
So there was nothing we can sit down and talk about.
Mm.
But now of late, so like I said, my daughter, she'll ask me, say, Dad, when you're doing this story, what was happening? What did, you know, trying to figure out all of that.
Yes.
And I explained to them and she'll ask me, why didn't do, like the same thing, why didn't do this? Why did you choose this direction? So all those kind of things, that's what kind of, so what we do is every 6 p.m. every day, it's dinner time. So at dinner time, my kids will randomly choose music from any country. So as we are eating, we need to guess what country is this music from. If we get it right, we start discussing the country's politics, its culture. It's because they'll select songs, let's say, from Mexico. So the whole app, it will be songs from Mexico, you know. We'll start talking about Mexico. What do you know about Mexico? If you were to visit Mexico, where would you like to go? What's the culture there? That's what we do every day.
That is dope.
At 6 p.m.
The
kids choose. They'll choose then and come and sit on the table and say, okay, guess, what country is this one? And some countries will get them right. Some countries we don't. So, but yeah.
But it gets the discussion going.
Yeah, it gets the discussion going. So it opens up to a lot of discussion because from there, they might take the discussion outside dinner. So, okay, you said about this. Do you know anything about, you know, all those kind of things?
Absolutely.
Yes.
What song did you have on repeat this week?
It was Zim Ngawane's song, Gubi. Yeah.
Is it about the country or about where you are right now?
No, it's just, I think, before Brazim died, we were planning to do something. Because he came to me and then asked me if me and Blake Coffee can work on a project with him. And I phoned Nat at the time. I said, Nat, because at the time when I phoned Nat, Brazim was still with me.
Yes.
Say, Nat, I've got Brazim here. He wants to work with us on this a new project of his. And Blake Coffee was like, yeah, let's do it. And then unfortunately he passed on before we couldn't do even one song, you know. Then Gubi is because the alternative album that I'm doing, that whole album, Brazim, inspired me a lot on a different level in terms of, if you listen to Zim Ngawane's albums, the production, it's amazing.
He's a musician.
It's amazing. So I learned a lot from listening to his music. So for me, Gubi is one of those songs that I can play it from here to Bushbuckridge, non-stop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Obviously, the big headlines in this country for the last couple of months has been the Madlanga Commission. What happened at Madlanga this week that had you shaking your head?
Signals.
Yeah.
The signals are so, yeah, the signals are something else.
Sure.
We're not saying people are not sick, but why only get sick when you're supposed to appear at Madlanga Commission?
Because you have anxiety. Anxiety leads to other things. These things are psychosomatic sometimes.
Yeah.
There is not that whatsoever.
Yeah, but then you get sick, then you're being spotted at a restaurant in Woolies in Cape Town.
I'm hungry. I must eat. Sick people eat.
So if you are fit enough to fly
to
Cape Town and go to the restaurant and have lunch or dinner or breakfast, what stops you from being pushed on a wheelchair to Madlanga Commission to get this thing over and done with?
So what do you suggest be done with these people?
I think Madlanga Commission should have their own team of doctors. If someone phoned and said, I'm sick today, they send their own doctors.
Yes.
To go and examine
them. Examine them, yes.
Examine them, yes. There's a patient-doctor confused. They shall it, but if you are sick, you are sick.
Exactly.
They won't say, Fresh is sick because he's got a running stomach. No,
they just confirm that you are sick.
He's sick. That's it. I think that's the only alternative they have now, right now. Yeah. And also the thing of this IDEC that they're going to arrest you for what crime you're going to commit in future is very shocking. So now they'll arrest you now because probably you have a child, he might be a bank robber. They don't know yet, but it might happen in future.
Yeah, but it's preemptive. Isn't that why Iran is being bombed? It's preemptive, Moose.
So the jail will be full. Jails will be full for people arresting people for crimes that they might commit in future. So that's another way of how people have been abusing their powers in this country. So
what are you hoping the outcome will be when all is said and done and the Madlanga Mkhwanazi dust has settled?
I hope to see a change in the way, in the SAPS and in the way they're doing their job and in the way people in this country get arrested and prosecuted. And also want to see all those implicated with evidence being behind the bus.
That's what you're hoping for.
Yes.
What's the strangest tip-off or DM you've received this week? Without giving us too much detail.
That was the strangest. So I got this DM this week. Someone saying Elon Musk want to talk to me directly. It's a verified one of those Twitter company accounts. So I checked it. So I get this thing. I like this one is saying Elon Musk want to talk to you directly. So I responded. I said, if Elon Musk want to talk me to directly, he's got my Twitter account and probably he's got my numbers because...
Anyway.
So he must not send a messenger. He must call me directly. And that's what I said.
If it is Vele that he does want to talk to you, what do you think he wants to talk about?
I think if you follow me on Twitter, me and him have been at loggerheads on a number of more especially the lies he's been telling about South Africa around the world. I've called him off for that. So I don't know whether it's about that or not, but that's what the strangest inbox I got this week. But again, I checked the account. It's one of those X accounts, official X account from the different, but I told the person, I said, Elon Musk has got my number, my email, and my, if you're saying you want to talk to me directly, why is he sending you?
How do you decide which Twitter or X skirmish to jump into? What informs that? Okay. Maybe I need to address this.
There are two things. So one, I post and leave. Sometimes I don't even follow who says what after I post it. And then in the inbox site, before, if someone inbox me, then I go to their profile.
Yes.
If I found on their profile that they've done something terrible or bad or something like that, I ignore that tweet. But if I, because I need to do background on about you before I can respond to you.
Mm.
So before I even read what you have inboxed me, I go to your profile, read it. If it's interesting, I Google it, then trying to figure out some more. If I find out that you are something that is not someone that I can have a conversation with,
okay, or,
I just ignore it.
Mm, okay.
But if some find out you tend to be a good person and I engage
or you, worthy of the engagement,
yes, I'll engage you.
Because sometimes, because I mean, you're at what, 600,000 followers?
Yes.
So whatever engagement amplifies them more than benefits you.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why I looked, regardless of what you are saying to me on your tweet, you know. You know, you've got those scammers that will come to you. You know, sorry to say this to you. I was scammed by an account similar to yours, and I told my friends to report you to Twitter. I apologize. Can we be friends? I'm like, do you have to read that? Do you have to respond to that? No, you don't have to waste your time on that.
In fact, your bio says you are a Pan-Africanist.
Most of.
What does Pan-Africanism look like in 2026, beyond the hashtags? If you were to reimagine it in 2026.
We are lost as Africans.
Yeah, dude. Yeah.
We are lost as Africans. We don't even know who we are.
Yes.
We don't even know what is Africa to us. What does it mean to us? We don't even know where we are going as Africans. Because you see, our forebears, they managed to reach out to each other, meet each other halfway. For us, it's about flossing. It's about insulting each other. It's about showing off that you can say F you to me. So you can show your friend, I told him to F off, you know. That's what we're not building each other. We're not encouraging each other. We're not guiding each other. We're not helping each other. We're just pulling each other, tearing each other apart. We are losing it as Africans.
Yes, sir.
We need to go back. We need to go back to the roots and say, what made our grandparents or grandfathers stronger? They didn't have internet, but they managed to make magic.
Yes.
They didn't have the technology that we're having today. Pyramids were built. Why can't we do it with the technology that, instead of using the technology for a good of humanity, we are using it just to tear each other apart?
Does the Department of Education, should they be playing any role in the Africanization of our children?
Yes, definitely. They should change our syllabus. That's where we are getting it wrong. So our kids grow up learning about Jan van Riebeck, Germany, Hitler, and all of that. They know less about Steve Biko. They know less about Kwame Nkrumah. They know less about... That's why I did a song called My Teacher Taught Me Nonsense.
Yes.
So because I said, if I don't know anything about Steve Biko, I don't know anything about Patrice Lumumba, but I've been to school.
Yes.
Then I learned nothing. My teacher taught me nonsense.
But you know the timelines of World War One, World War Two, exactly. League of Nations, United Nations.
All those things. But you know nothing about your Africa. Then what's that? Our syllabus needs to change completely.
I can tell you when UN Secretary General Doug Hammarskjöld's plane was shot down.
Yes.
But I can't tell you when Queen Nzinga died.
No, you can ask people, when was Samora Machel's plane shot down?
Yeah.
They won't even tell you.
Absolutely.
It crashed, sorry, not shot down, but it crashed. So they won't tell you. There's this thing, if you ask people, what's the color, was the color of the lingerie Beyonce was wearing yesterday, they will tell you.
Yeah.
But ask them about home issues, nothing.
In fact, let's stay on social media. So you have what, 650,000 followers?
I think so.
As an investigative journalist, would you say that reach is a weapon or a liability? And do sources find you even on your social media?
I'm trying to figure out if I have ever got any story from social media. See, I find my own stories. That's the thing.
Okay.
I find my own stories my own way, you know. there was one story that I think on social media, someone was appointed to a senior government position. And then someone inboxed me and say, you know, the person that has been appointed today as so-and-so as is a murderer. He has killed my brother.
Oh, wow.
And I said, do you have any evidence of that? He said, let me speak to the family first before I speak to you. And then days later, I said, no, the family said they're scared. If we open up these old wounds, they might come back for us, since now the person is now in a senior government. So the story never materialized. So I never wrote that story because of that.
So there's a murderer amongst us, but we'll never find out.
But I don't have the evidence.
Yeah.
Yes. But that's what the inbox was saying. Yes.
Are there any stories you've let go of, but in hindsight you wish you hadn't?
I think I've done everything I should have done. I think I've exhausted all those avenues.
So there's no stone.
Remember, we're working as a team. It's not working alone. So we'll sit, brainstorm, decide whether this is worth pursuing or not. So it was not a one-man show that will sit as, this one I'm scared, or I know this one, this uncle is down the road. No, we sit as a team and decide as a team. And then if we agree to go on, we go on. If we agree not to, we don't do that.
One of your threads that even went international was your thread on King Mswati III and his wives and shopping sprees and fleets of Rolls Royces. How do you decide that this story cannot wait to be in the newspaper?
Okay, that was a Twitter feed. It was not a story in the newspaper.
Yes.
Because for me, it's like, okay, guy is buying Rolls Royce for his wife, probably using state money. So it was not like a story that was going to be in the newspaper. It was for people on the social media to be in the know.
Yes.
So the story, there was no story written. I just posted it on so people know that this is what is happening. Yes.
Do you ever post anything and in hindsight feel like, maybe I could have dug further and turned this into a story?
No. I think twice before I post something.
Okay, so you're very intentional about...
Yes. So if there's something that I wanted, but I'll think, okay, but I can turn this into a story, then I don't post about it.
Yeah.
Or I can post about it because I know I've got a different angle about it for a newspaper. Yes. So I post this, but I know I'm going this direction.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
What I find interesting about your timeline is that it swings from corruption exposés to house music to African history in one morning sometimes. Can the real Mzili Gazi please stand up? Which one, firstly, pays the bills? And secondly, where is your heart truly at?
My heart is in Africa.
Yes.
And that's why if I go to bed without posting about Africa, I don't feel good.
Yes.
So my heart is about Africa, everything I do. Other stuff, they come in between. For me, first thing first, everything about Africa. That's why when I wake up in the morning, I post Coast to inspire and motivate people.
Yes.
And then during the day, I post photos to remind people of who we are as Africans. And yeah.
A lot of us like posting and tweeting and hashtagging Africa Rise, Africa Rise. But are we doing enough for Africa to rise? And what needs to happen? Because, you know, we can talk about, you know, our leaders fully invested, Vele, in Africa rising. Are we doing enough to hold leaders accountable? Are the youth militant enough to say to our leaders, if you don't do it, we'll do it for you? What do we need to do on this continent to be taken seriously? And could we learn something from the Sahel region?
We need to go back into understanding politics. You see, there are people who are like learning politics from social media,
yes,
which is very dangerous.
Mm.
So that those who have got experience in politics,
yes,
they look at things completely differently than those who are just learning politics from social media.
Sure.
Excuse me. So, for example, the first time I was arrested, I was a political activist back in the days.
How old are you?
I was 18.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was 18.
Mm.
I was arrested as a political activist because I started being involved in politics while I was from a young age, you know, all those kind of things. So I grew up in that culture. Then again, people will say, yeah, but there's no apartheid. What are we standing up for? We're standing up against maladministration. We're standing up about corruption. We're standing up that people get service delivery. We're standing up that we don't drive on the road with potholes. We're standing up that politicians are not stealing from government taxpayers. We're standing up because we want to see people being employed, proper jobs, not temporary jobs. We're standing up because we want to see our country being shining as a shining example of how democracy works in Africa and all of that. So now we're sitting up, folding our arms. So like, if Mzilika's post, we just attack him. Because that's the politics of other people on social media. They wait for you to post, then attack you. Because they don't like you, what you're saying, because it threaten their masters or threaten what they've been promised. So most of the time people will attack you on social media, not because you have done something wrong. It's because one, they want validation. Two, they want to be accepted by certain. Three, they want to show that they can do that to you.
And sometimes you trigger a cognitive dissonance within them.
Yes.
Because this is the view, the worldview, and you're saying, but look in the mirror.
Yes.
And sometimes that is uncomfortable.
It makes a lot of, that definitely, I've realized most of the of my tweet that says to people, please stand before the mirror and look into yourself. They will insult you for that. And like, then they expect you, they say, why are you not responding? Why must I respond? If you are not seeing the picture that I'm seeing. If you are blind to see the truth, I can't, there's nothing I can do to you.
But the next day you're back again.
No, the point is, it doesn't matter. You can insult me as much as you want. You won't stop me from doing what I believe in.
Yes.
I didn't join social media to be on the, to be church choir of some certain people. I joined social media to post what I want, how I want them, and when I want it. Yes.
What are your thoughts on cancel culture and muzzling people?
See, most of the time, people have got good reasons to do that. But sometimes, I've seen it in some instances, it's jealous. It's jealous and also relying on gossip, not having the facts. It just, Zilgaz is a troublemaker. Ah, let's cancel him. You never ask, okay, you say it's a trouble. What has he done? Is that justifiable? Is that so? If you step
almost
on
like,
your toes,
almost like a mob psychology of sorts.
Exactly. Yeah. If you step on your toes, did you step on other 10 people's toes? No, you just step on your toes. Then he's a bad guy. So we must all cancel. Yes, sometimes there are issues. There are serious reasons why people must be cancelled. That's but there are times where people, they're just following something they don't even know where it started and where it's going,
or they were ready to lynch someone. And it was your turn.
Yeah, except then get hanged for crime you didn't commit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Should radio play R. Kelly's music?
It's up to the particular radio station. I mean, it's the same question we'll ask. Should a rehabilitated politician be back in parliament?
Should they?
Should they?
I'm asking you. Should an impeached justice be in a parliamentary committee?
It depends on what crime is that. What was he impeached for? For example, you get arrested for driving 80 in a 60 zone. It's speed, of course. But was it reckless? 80 is still, but then you get arrested for driving 180 in a 120 zone. That's a completely different ball game altogether. So we cannot treat that someone was driving 80. Yes, he's speeding, but was he reckless? And that someone was driving 180 in a 120 zone, he's reckless. So we cannot treat them the same way.
Yeah, so they're doing 180 in a 120 zone, and they charged, they admit their guilt.
Yes.
And they do their time. Should they be allowed back in playing with other children?
Well, the issue is if the problem then becomes when you get someone who was admitted for being reckless in driving, and 18 and give them the Minister of Transport, then it's a big problem.
Okay.
For me, that's where the problem is. It's a big problem. As he might have been rehabilitated,
yes,
but the crime that he committed, they are within that range.
The other day, Brafikile Mbalula, SG of the ANC, spoke about how Sis Dina Pule had learned a lesson. She's done her time. So we must cut her some slack when it comes to her appointment as minister in Ghana. What's the portfolio again?
As
social development. What are your thoughts on that?
I reserve not to comment. Why? Let me
tell us. Tell us why.
Because I'm the one who got her fired in the first place.
So you broke that story.
Yes. So so I really don't want to be saying it because I'm the one who got her fired in the first place. So I really don't want to because now some people might say it's personal and it's not personal. So I rather reserve my comment.
But if a person has suffered the consequences and proverbially done that time, surely they deserve a second chance.
That's why even guys go to prison and get released on good behavior.
Yeah.
They get released.
And you don't throw them into a dustbin.
No,
we incorporate them back into society.
Exactly. Yes. People do go to prison and get released.
So, for instance, some people will argue that Mama Dina didn't necessarily take money. Yes, public protector said, "Ore," but ufagile someone and gave them opportunity and gave them an advantage.
I really don't want to comment. I really don't want to comment because, I really don't want to comment on the appointment. It's out of respect. Facts. I wrote that story, and most people know what she tried to do to me before she was fired.
What did she try and do to you?
She had a press conference at the Hyatt Hotel next to my office and called me all sorts of things.
Oh yes, I remember the press conference.
Yes.
What was the fallout as a result of the press conference?
Because she lied a lot at that press conference. Yes. Just trying to justify what she was doing. So, like I said, I really don't want to talk about it because then, people might say I'm against her being a vegan. That's why a lot of journalists contacted me when she was say, "What's your comment?" I'm like, "No comment." Yeah, because it's now people will turn it personal even when I'm not, I'm just saying whatever I think about it. But
I can respect that. But now because I'm a believer in if someone has done that time, then we don't throw people away.
You don't.
We don't throw people away. And I guess we will give them the benefit of the doubt that she learned a lesson and she's gone through some sort of rehab, as Mbak said.
But have you seen people who have been released on parole? Well, some of them went back to jail for doing the same crime.
And others didn't.
Yeah, others did. Yes. That's why I say some of them. Yes, others didn't. And others come back and rebuild themselves.
Yes.
And turn things around and they've learned their lessons.
I mean, for instance, I'll give you an example. Ntate Hlophe, former Chief Justice, Dr. Hlophe. Surely he has more experience than the transgression that led to the impeachment and would be more of an asset than not.
Okay.
In parliament or not. I don't know what you feel.
There are two things that you should know fresh.
Yes.
In politics, there are factions. So if you are in the right faction, you can steal 50 million rand.
Yeah.
They will protect you not to go to jail. If you are in the wrong faction, you can steal 50 cents. They will make sure that you go to jail. So it depends on the faction. It's not, in many occasions, it's not about the crime he might have committed.
Yes.
It's about what fiction you belong to. You get punished for that.
Sure.
So that's the problem.
Ntate Hlophe, is he an asset or a liability in parliament?
to the MKP.
To the MKP, yes.
It's a liability. It's an asset.
Okay.
But to the other people opposing the MKP, it's a liability.
Where do you stand? If you had to be the arbitrator there.
I'm not a member of parliament. I've never been to parliament. So.
But you're a voter.
Yeah. That's why people have to go out and exercise their vote at the voting polling station. See, like now, the local government elections are around the corner. So whatever you say or do, don't try to influence whatever people want to see. Just state your case.
Sure.
People have to go out and decide whether is this a good party for me that will change my life or not.
Sure.
And vote according to what they feel.
Mm.
So I don't know.
Sure.
I'm not in parliament.
But the way you answer some questions, maybe you need to be in politics.
No, I'm done with politics. No, 1998, I left politics in 1998. I never joined any political party. People have tried to associate me with a number of political parties. I left, I think my membership of the ANC elapsed in 1999. I never renewed it. I've never joined any political party. I've got no desire of doing so. So most people, because of my closeness to certain politicians, they try and link me to EFF. And I'm like, I'm closer to Julius as a person because he's my cousin.
Yes.
Not the party. I'm closer to Floyd because he's my friend.
Sure.
But I'm not a member of Mabui. I know Jacob Zuma. I go and visit him in Kandla. I'm not a member of MKP.
Yes.
I know General Bantu Holomisa. I've known him for years. I'm not a member of UDF. UDM. So now people try to box you according to how they want to character assassinate you. We can see you. You are a member of EFF. Like, when? I said on social media in black and white, I said I stand with Julius because he's my cousin, not what he has done.
Yes.
I stand with him as a cousin. Finish and clear. Does that make you a member of EFF? I don't know.
It's an argument I had with a friend of mine, because Julius has booked me for many an event.
Yes.
You know, whether it was at the Durban July or Kopolokwane, and people always say to me, am I not afraid? People are going to think kill the EFF. I'm like, Juju is my guy before he's a politician in my eyes. And the fact that he gives me business, I'm not going to stop doing business with him, because when you don't like him.
Exactly. So people, because they don't like him, when they see you with him, it's a problem to them. I like, deal with your problem. If you're obsessed with him, be obsessed with him.
Yes.
Leave me and my cousin alone.
Mm.
I didn't say, you've never seen me wearing an EFF t-shirt or a cap. I just said, the guy is my cousin. So as my cousin, for example, Fresh, when I was arrested, who came to fetch me from jail? It was my brother. So because I was arrested for that 2010 arrest, so you're saying that my family must distance themselves?
Now they must disassociate.
Was I found guilty for that crime? No.
And even if you were guilty, your brother will stand with you.
Exactly. As if their own relative is not going through that, they won't do the same thing.
And sometimes you need to go through it to actually know where you stand with which people.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it becomes very...
You know, you see, the issue, I'm giving an example about my brother. It cost him, bro. It cost him. So when the judge eventually said I must be released from jail after the police refused. So when my brother came to fetch me from prison, so there were cameras and everything. The following morning, he lost all the contracts he had with government.
Oh, wow.
He lost them. He lost. He has to go from zero. Can't you hear this guy's brother canceling all your contracts? Did you do any crime? Nothing. Just because it's my brother. He came to fetch me from the cells. He has to lose everything. That's the mentality that we're having here.
Sure.
Guilty by association, not guilty by the crime you yourself has committed.
We're out of time.
Thank you.
But I think we need a part two and a part three. Because I can talk to you once a week, every week, yeah, for the rest of our lives. What are you writing this week?
You see, that's one thing people don't understand or know. They think I'm still practicing. I left journalism to concentrate on what I'm doing.
Okay.
I just, because I get
So what are you doing?
I'm more into business.
Okay.
I'm more into business. I'm more into making music. I'm more into making movies.
So how
I'm
do we how do we
writing books?
So how do we support your business? Where do we go to support you?
That's why I said I was out of the country, because I'm trying to make business out of the country, because yes, right, sir, here I've got so many enemies that they might even they see me eating on the corner begging, they'll kick my bowling
in your face.
In my face. So that's why, yeah. So I'm very soon you'll know what I'm doing. But I'm making movies, I'm writing books, I'm got a podcast, I'm making music.
Looking back at exactly the last, say, 28 to 30 years, and everything that your choices in terms of career have cost you, was it worth it?
It was. You see, when a soldier goes to war, if he comes back limping, it doesn't mean that he didn't fight a good war. It means he went to war, he fought his best of his ability, but in the process, the enemy go to him.
Yes.
But doesn't make you a loser. Since you survive, you're coming back home. You might be limping, you might have bruises and all of that. You are coming back home as a hero.
So
yes, I'm not regretting anything.
In closing, what's your wish for this country? Your hope for this country?
I hope the youth of this country fully understand the politics of this country, of Africa, so that when they go out in numbers to vote, they make the right choices.
Sure.
Not choices that they'll regret 4-3 years down the line.
Mm.
Because we see the youth of this country tend to follow politicians, not politicians. Not politics.
It becomes very cult-like.
Yes, it becomes cult-like. So you don't understand the ideology of that politician you're following. You just like him or her, and that's all. That's all that matters to you. That's not politics.
Yes.
That's obsession.
So
I wish the youth of this country go back to the grassroots and start understand the politics of this country, so they can make an informed decision about the future of this country.
It would be irresponsible of me not to ask you to weigh in on March and March and June 30.
I reserve my comments.
Why do you reserve your comments?
No, because the issue, like, I'm Shangan, and the Sata Mashangan or Ahamb.
Sure.
And I reserve my comment. And the issue is, I'm born and bred in South Africa. If you say I'm a Shangan Ahambe, you're making a irresponsible statement.
And where must you go to?
Exactly.
Must
I move Bushbuck Ridge to somewhere? Where must I move Bushbuck Ridge to? To Zim side, Mozambique side, Swaziland side, or where? So I can go.
All the rhetoric aside, all the threats and everything else aside, something still got to give though. What would that be?
So the problem is, the biggest problem is, we do have a serious problem with undocumented foreign nationals in this country. It's a serious problem. It's a security risk and it's a threat. The problem is, how are we dealing with it?
Sure.
For example, you ask yourself, how did someone without a passport landed up at OR Tambo and walk through and end up being in Hillbrow, for example? How did it happen? It means someone at the airport was bribed. Until we find that someone, teach him a lesson, that person is going to tell the next person. So I went through Mzi at the airport. When he arrived at the OR, just ask for Mzi, give him 1,000 rand, or you go through. So until we fix that problem. We ask ourselves, how did someone walk through any border? Yes, we understand from Zim, some people are swimming through the river. But then you ask yourself, between the Libombo border post, how are the people crossing there? Oshuka, how are the people crossing there?
So find the source of the leak.
Find the source of the leak. So we need to vet all the people who are working for border management, do lifestyle audit, and see they are not the ones who are selling entrance in this country. That's how we solve the problem. Then, so that when you take people out of the country, we sure they're not going to come back because the doors are closed. But right now, the doors are wide open.
Sure. The local government elections are around the corner.
Yes.
Where's your headspace at in that regard? We have 108 days left until the local government elections.
Around August, we're expecting the second report from the Statistician General that will explain in terms of employment and stuff like that. That the first report painted a very bad picture. Youth in this country are unemployed, the majority of them, and the women in particular. The issue is, do we have service delivery in our communities? If so, who's doing that for us? And if we don't have them, why do we keep on voting the same people who are denying, why not delivering services to our people over and over again? Then people must go out there and vote in their numbers, but make wise decisions. Vote for parties of their choices, of course. But point is, I'll drive out of here. This is 4 weeks. Before I reach my house, I'll pass, I think, more than 50 potholes. Is that acceptable? I think here around Bryanston, you've noticed, every weekend we don't have water. It's happened every Friday, you know. Every Friday, there'll be a notice there's a water issue. Like, why is this water problematic every Friday? But during the week, it's not a problem. So, those are the issues that we should take in note when we're going out to vote.
Yeah. Mzi, where do we find you online? If I want to engage with you, check out your social media and support any future endeavors that you might be busy with.
I'm on X.
Yes.
Which is I am Mzi Ligas.
Yes.
I've not been on Facebook for more than 15 years. I don't even know what my account was called.
I'm sure
but
that
I didn't close it, but
I'm sure there's 10 other accounts now.
Yeah, but anyway. I'm not on Facebook. If you see someone as Mzi Ligas, I've not been there for more than 15 years. I'm not there. I'm trying to build my Instagram account. My Instagram account was hacked when it had more than a million followers. Some people hacked it and threatened to said I must pay them if I want them to release my account. I said, go to hell. Yeah. So I'm still rebuilding my Instagram account. Yeah.
Mzi, thank you for your time.
Thanks for having me.
I have nothing but respect for your resolve and for your love for this country.
Thanks very much, brother.
Because you tread where many would not even dream of treading, let alone try and do it.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I'm not going to say investigative journalism is dying, because we have enough people who love the country that are willing to die for it, even at that level. So I think it's unsung heroes such as yourselves that we need to bring into platforms and just remind you that we see the work you've done. We appreciate the sacrifice your family has made, and the fact that often they wouldn't know if you're coming home that day.
It happened a lot.
I know. So this is me just saying, I see the work that you do, and I've seen it for the last 30 years.
Thanks very much, brother. Thanks for having me, and thanks for allow me to share my story with your viewers.
We'll be back with the part two. Mzi Ligas, where Africa is about to leave the building. There's brand new music coming out this year, and there's other stuff he's working on that hopefully you will all support. You've done two books now, ne?
No, I'm working on the second one.
Oh, you're working on the second one already?
Yeah. It's a sequel to the Nothing Left to Steal. This one is No One Left to Kill.
Well, but surely there's still something left to steal, no?
Yeah, there's a lot.
Okay. Mm. Mzilika Zu Africa is about to leave the building. Thank you for watching Wow What a Week, coming to you from Discover TV in four ways. Discover TV, let them be your stage. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. You can email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Shout out to Keletso Modisake, our executive producer, Trevor and Pezulu Works for the cinematography, and most importantly, you for watching, for liking, for subscribing. Until next week, have a wow week in spite of yourselves.